This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will visit with well-known trial attorney Lewis Owens Unglesby. He has some ideas to convey about gun reform measures that are being touted on Capitol Hill and elsewhere. And there is a press conference slated today from the National Rifle Association. We will hear from the always outspoken Lewis Unglesby. Also on the show, David Precise. He heads the Louisiana chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. He will weigh in on the stigma that mentally ill people have as a result of the tragedy in Connecticut. And David has some opinions about whether or not mass shooters are usually mentally ill. All this today, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your numbers are 877-217-5757 and 297-5633. You may reach us via email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Later this hour, we may be preempted for those listening in the morning, and that is where we are right now. Maybe preempted by a press conference from the National Rifle Association in the latter part of this hour. So we will follow that as it happens. But in studio is Lewis Owens Unglesby, perhaps the best-known lawyer in this area. And he is a man with passions and thoughts and ideas about many subjects, including the one that's permeated the American culture for the last week. It was 1 week ago today at about this time that the terrible tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut was unfolding, in which 26 people were killed. Lewis Unglesby, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And you have been somebody who's talked a bit about guns and gun rights, and you are a hunter, correct?
Oh, yeah. I'm a big hunter. I probably own more guns than 95% of the people on this radio and use them, and we'll use them next week if I get an opportunity.
What kind of hunting do you like to do?
Duck hunting, deer hunting, you know, that kind of hunting. And the reason I'm here is because I would ask, I think, all hunters, all people that understand weaponry on any level, know deep down, we absolutely know that there's no reason, none, no defensible, no intellectual, no moral, no Second Amendment, no reason for the kind of weapons that crazy person had last week, that they had in Colorado, that they had in Columbine, and that they've had over the years. They just, there's no basis for it. And the only way to do it, we can't stop crazy people, but we can make it a lot harder for them. Instead of so easy with these rapid-fire magazine implements of death that are just as dangerous as heroin or cocaine or anything else, and they shouldn't be around.
Last week was a week that we will never forget, and various people have opined about what happened and where we go from here. But our congressional delegation and the governor, they've been suspiciously silent.
They all get money from the NRA, which is a joke organization. The NRA gets $15 million a year from gun manufacturers. It's one of the largest lobbying groups, if not the most effective lobbying group in Washington. It's been said that it owns the Republican Party. They can speak for themselves on that by standing up to the NRA. The stupidity of the NRA in saying that any restrictions, reasonable restrictions on rapid-fire weaponry and high-caliber weaponry somehow will affect the Second Amendment is intellectually specious, has no basis. And I'm saying right now to the audience, if the city of Baton Rouge, Kip Holden, and that new set of councilmen want to make a statement, make those guns illegal, declare them contraband, you can't have them, you can't use them. Agree, we'll raise the money with charity, we'll raise the money through government, we'll buy them back from people. It's not fair in commerce for somebody like Jim's Firearms to lose money because they're presently capable of selling a legal piece of machinery. But buy them from them. Stop it now. A year from now, if you got one of those guns, you're breaking the law. It's that simple. It's not complicated. It's not illegal. It fits all the Commerce Clause requirements, and it stops this craziness.
Does the Metro Council have jurisdiction on this?
Sure they do. For the city of Baton Rouge, they could do it. They could do it for the parish of East Baton Rouge. And think what a great statement. For a red state, sportsman's paradise, like Louisiana, to make. You know? There's not a person listening to me that loves his gun more than a child. You know? Or a citizen's right to go to someplace like the movie. Now, we can't stop crazy people, but let's look. As recently as last week, before this happened, we just chopped the budget in Louisiana on mental health to basically zero, and have been doing that over and over, and that's not unique to Louisiana. Those people always take the hit when it comes time to the economic crisis that varies up and down in state government fundings. So the idea that we're going to do mental health evaluations and all of gun owners is just goofy. It's also intellectually incorrect. What are you going to do? Give a Rorschach test to somebody trying to buy a gun? Well, then you really are discriminating. Then you really are interfering with the Second Amendment. Then you really are deciding, having some gun salesman decide whether or not you got the brain power and the psychological capacity to own a weapon. Well, that isn't what the Second Amendment's about. So let's fight the battles that are legitimately winnable.
Okay, 297-5633 if you'd like to join the conversation with Lewis Unglesby, who says it's time to get these assault weapons off the street. You're not talking about all guns, are you?
No, I have probably 15 or 20 myself, but my gun, if I want to go out there and shoot a deer, I can shoot 3 bullets. Then I got to reload. And each time that I want to shoot the bullet, I got to rechamber. I can't just fire out and kill the whole herd, which you can with a Bushmaster AR-15.
So you don't have a weapon like this gentleman used last week?
No, and no one should, because they're not for people. They're for highly trained servicemen and women. You know, they don't even allow in the Army you to bring a you're not allowed to have a loaded weapon in the barracks. Under any circumstances. Mm-hmm. Now, these are people that spend all day working with guns, but they know that you can't be wandering around with potential danger like that.
Now, earlier, you've given us a lot to work with here. Earlier, you said that the NRA was basically in charge of the Republican Party in America. There are 4 million members of the National Rifle Association. As far as contributions, do you have any information regarding people in Louisiana and how they have been supported by the National Rifle Association?
Well, according to the Internet, every Republican has gotten money from the National Rifle Association that's in our congressional Congress. Vitter got money from the National Rifle Association. The leaders of the Republican Party, Boehner, Cantor, and Ryan, got money from the National Rifle Association. But I don't care if people want to get money from the National Rifle Association or where they get their money. The problem is, going along with stupid ideas, you know, good ideas, the National Rifle Association does a lot of good things. It supposedly was invented to teach people how to shoot safely. It supposedly was invented for marksmanship purposes and clay pigeons and sporting and things like that. It just got involved in politics in the late 70s and early 80s. But since then, it's got this gigantic budget of lobbyists, which is just a euphemism for influence peddler.
All right. The mayor of New York City, Michael Bloomberg, one of the wealthiest people in the world, is planning, according to the New York Times and its front page story today, to spend millions of dollars over the next 2 years to support political candidates willing to oppose the NRA.
I think that's a great idea. But you don't have but we're fighting. I keep going back. Not that my idea is the only idea. There are millions of them. But you're not going to ban guns in the concept of in America. Guns are in the culture of America in multiple ways. And many people enjoy guns, enjoy hunting, enjoy the self-defense concept of a pistol. But you can control these weapons of really mass destruction that have no basis and no don't fit into any of those categories.
All right, we'll go to the phone lines. Please be brief. There are a few folks waiting to talk to Lewis Unglesby. Marcia in Clinton. Hi, Marcia.
Hi. I come from a family that has always owned guns. My late husband, Hamilton, hunted. We never owned any of those kinds of assault rifles. Those have nothing to do with hunting. They have nothing to do with recreation. I'm a retired teacher, and I think the time is long past. I agree with Mr. Unglesby 100%. These things need to be outlawed. All these rapid-fire things, pistols and rifles, need to be outlawed. People don't need them to hunt, and they really don't need them for self-defense. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Marcia. Kevin, can you give me an indication on who I should go to next? Randy and Zachary. Hi, Randy. You're on with Lewis Unglesby.
Hi there. Yes, I'll make a comment. These crazy people that do these insane things, they're not interested in obeying the law. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Randy. 297-5633 is your number. Taurus and Plaquemine. Taurus, good morning. You're on with Lewis Unglesby.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Inkster, and good morning, Mr. Unglesby. I have a question concerning a person who used an assault weapon to kill someone and a person who drives under the influence of alcohol, and in most cases, these are the people who kill someone, and they have numerous DWIs.
Well, can I just comment on that real quick?
Sure.
First, Randy, of course you're right. We're trying to make it harder for them to do what they do when they're crazy. As for the idea of DWIs, you know, that's what kind of why I'm here, and I hope that there's a million of me somewhere in this country and 10 million of me. The most effective lobbying group in reality that I've seen since I've been a lawyer is Mothers Against Drunk Driving. They don't have money. They don't have to go to the legislature with politics and give money or anything else. Their message resonates, and it's probably the most effective, just grassroots change in the culture that's happened all over the country. And Mothers Against Drunk Driving is a great template for people that want to do something about these kinds of unnecessary weapons.
All right. Thank you, Taurus. Appreciate your call. 877-217-5757 for Lewis Unglesby. Joseph and Walker. Hi, Joseph. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks, and good morning. I just want to let you know I don't really agree with the banning the gun thing, because, you know, basically it's just a toehold to start a vicious circle. You know, before it's over, everything's going to be banned. And I don't agree with that at all. I think everybody should just use sense and be safe and do the right thing if they have one.
Well, that'd be great, except we don't. And if that were legitimate, we'd all say you could make cars that go 300 miles an hour, and we wouldn't have speed limits, because everybody would have enough sense not to go 300 miles an hour, and they would have enough sense not to have wrecks. We know that there are certain legitimate social needs to control us within reason.
Now, the gun sales in America have gone way up this week, although the stocks in some gun companies have plummeted. Carl Dirkheimer, who is the owner of Northwest Armory in Portland, Oregon, says in 20 years of business, it's been the busiest week in sales. That sentiment has been echoed here locally. And so you're talking about these gun operators, merchants who are in business, not being hurt. It seems like they're being helped by this.
Well, I can't imagine that they're happy about that. But anyone who's ginning up gun control fear to make money, anybody that's doing such a thing as that, they have to deal with their own conscience. That's ridiculous. And anybody that's stupid enough, and I use that word, to be running out buying one of these guns because they're scared the government's going to take it from them, isn't listening to the rest of his friends and neighbors and not thinking.
Karen on Highway 61. Hi, Karen.
Hello.
Yes.
Oh, you ready for my comment?
I am.
Okay. You know, the thing that we're assuming here is that criminals are going to obey the law, and they don't. So the other thing that has shown up in statistics is that when you are not in a gun-free zone, you're not in one of these safe zones, then you're a lot safer. When people know that there's somebody who could take them out if they're coming in with a gun like this crazy man did the other day, then they are a little bit hesitant. They want to go to a soft target, somewhere where people can't defend themselves.
Well, all right, Karen, you hold
Karen,
on the line,
you're
Karen.
Talking to a guy who's had a gun held to his head twice and has more guns than you probably do. I will tell you that a gun-free zone is bull.
Okay, we'll get more comments from Lewis Unglesby. Thank you, Karen, when we return after this one-minute timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Lewis Unglesby is a guest. 297-5633 is your number. You say you've been held at gunpoint, gun to your head twice.
Well, yeah, and that's not a relevant except to the idea. It's another one of these false arguments. No one, my proposal and all the proposals of rational, reasonable gun owners is not banning guns. It's not changing the Second Amendment. It's banning certain types of guns and certain types of weaponry and certain types of armament. That's all. If you know, you can only put three shotgun shells in the gun at a time to shoot ducks. If they catch you with taking your plug out and you have five or six, you can go to federal prison. Now, my goodness, we're protecting ducks and we can't protect each other? It's just, it's a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
There's no self-defense mechanism that requires you to be walking around. You don't see police walking around the streets with AR-15s on their back.
What did you do when you were held at gunpoint?
Paid attention and listened carefully.
You didn't resist?
When you have a gun to your temple, Jim, there isn't...
It's not a high percentage move.
Time for resistance is gone, okay? If you had a gun on you, you can't get to it. You've been outdrawn.
Claire in the Garden District. Hi, Claire. You're on with Lewis Unglesby.
Hi, Jim. I have 3 points to make. First of all, one of our fundamental documents in the United States and our constitutional history speaks to the right to life. And, you know, that I think that Trump's idea is the right to someone have an assault weapon. Secondly, I think Mr. Unglesby has a good idea, and I hope that somehow there's a citizen's task force that can follow through on it. And thirdly, I want to mention, I grew up in a community with a lot of retired military people. I married into a military family, including my husband. I also, I know a lot of ROTC officers in the community. None of those people had guns in their home.
My experiences with many of the veterans from Vietnam are in my age, although I certainly was not one of those gentlemen, is the same. You find very few people that were actually in service who have any affinity for guns at all.
Jim and Walker. Hi, Jim. You're on with Lewis Unglesby.
How you doing, gentlemen? Your previous caller, two callers back, just kind of finally was the tipping point. I'm really sick and tired of idiots using the completely stupid argument, and I do not use idiot or stupid lightly, that for some reason, that because criminals are going to break the law, then we don't need a law. That why do we have a single law at all? Why do we have, you know, laws against theft, speeding, murder, anything, because criminals are just going to break. Let's have no laws at all. It's just broken, illogical thinking.
Thank you, Jim.
I don't really know what the response to that is, but I'll say if you're talking about the Second Amendment, Jim, I'll tell you what, friend. I'll give you the Second Amendment without a single change in an apostrophe if you'll give me the weaponry of 1781.
Sean on Nicholson. Hi, Sean. You're on with Lewis Unglesby.
Good morning, gentlemen. The point I would wanted to make were two. First of all, I think the easy answer for all of this would be just to classify certain weapons as Class 3 weapons. As we know, Class 3 weapons, in terms of crimes being committed with them, are pretty much non-existent at this point. At the same time, being an individual who owns Class 3 weapons, I will say this. People running out to possibly purchase assault rifles at this point, it's an investment idea. I mean, you Class 3 weapons in the 80s that sold for $200, $300, $400 are now selling for $16,000, $25,000 legally transferable fully automatic weapons. So in that scenario, actually, that makes a pretty good investment in terms of if there is a ban or a move to a Class 3 classification of any of these weapons. Thank you.
I don't know if people are buying guns so they can sell them later at a higher price. I can't comment on that. I just say that these type of guns have no purpose, and I'm waiting for somebody to call in here, or I'm waiting to meet the man, I haven't met him in 20 years, who says, you know, this is why we need an AR-15, or this is why we need a magazine that shoots a 30 round pistol. I just can't find that person, because no one that uses guns thinks that.
Rick asks, how do you enforce a law in Baton Rouge that forbids having an AR-15 in your home?
Is there a law in Baton Rouge that forbids
having an AR-15? No, I think if we had a law, would it be enforced?
My proposal is we're going to make those weapons contraband, period. Just like you can't have heroin at your house, Rick, or cocaine. Now, because right now it's legal, it would not be fair from a commercial perspective to just immediately ban those weapons and cause people to lose their money or lose, like this fellow thinks, maybe their investment or whatever. But you give a period of time, the government and charitable organizations buy them back, and after that period of time, you can't have them anymore. You know, we have these drives occasionally where people are allowed to turn in their guns. And they've been somewhat successful. Police enjoy doing that. And it's the same concept. But we know, we pass a law that says after a date certain, these guns go from legal weapons to contraband. And you've got this much time to get rid of them. It's not complicated.
Ralph at LSU. Hi, Ralph. You're on with Lewis.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Lewis. Good morning. I would suggest that gun ownership would be a license privilege, where you would, just like a driver's license, an automobile license, you would have to take classes on safety and operation and test out under a stressful situation. Thank you.
The problem with that idea, it's a great idea. A lot of people talk about it, but unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, the Constitution itself is sacrosanct, and it prescribes what our rights are, and they're the rights of citizenship, and the Second Amendment is in there. So unlike, you have no right to a driver's license, that's a privilege the state grants you. You have no right, in my case, to be a lawyer. That's a privilege that's granted to me by the Supreme Court. It can be revoked. As a citizen, you do have the right to vote. You have the right to own a gun. That's America.
Chris on Blue Bonnet. Hi, Chris. You're on the air with Lewis Unglesby.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to ask Lewis, I mean, I haven't heard him bring up anything about, you know, the two recent Supreme Court cases in Heller and McDonald, and the fact that, you know, the Supreme Court said, yes, we do have a right to own a handgun or to own a gun for self-defense purposes. However, it was completely okay with the fact that states and the federal government could put restrictions on these weapons and the type of weapons and what they're used for. I mean, I know we have differing opinions coming out of the appellate courts about concealed carry that is probably going to go up to the Supreme Court soon. And, you know, to me, the Second Amendment does not say that you can own an AR-15 or that you can conceal carry anywhere you want to. It says you have the right to keep and bear arms. And what that means is that you have a right to defend your home and to defend, you know, your castle at home. And it doesn't mean that you get to carry it wherever, like it's the Wild West, or to, you know, own any kind of weapon. I mean, we don't allow you to own a grenade.
All right. Thank you. Chris, Lewis?
Well, the Supreme Court has said that all it said is the Second Amendment is the Second Amendment, and at the same time it said reasonable restrictions and understandable thoughts in modern times have to always be taken into effect. It says that in many constitutional cases, that you have to look at the times in which you're living, and certainly reasonable restrictions are legitimate. And in places like New York City, I mean, this is a sad thing to say, but it's the truth. I used to live in the French Quarter and work offshore on oil rigs, and I had very varying times in the 60s that I'd be moving around at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd never walk all the way through the French Quarter, no thought about it. I used to go to New York in the 70s in Manhattan. After dark, you were on alert. Today, I walk anywhere I want in New York City after dark. I wouldn't walk through the French Quarter at 3 o'clock in the morning. So this idea that we all are armed up is a good idea is not born reality.
Rick in Central. Hi, Rick. You're on WRKF with Lewis Unglesby.
Hi, yes, sir. I just want to say I believe more gun owners would be more likely to accept a
additional regulation if people weren't, you know, as he stated earlier, pushing for a complete ban on assault rifles. I mean, that's what they're scared of. But if there was some middle ground without this, you know, people like this coming on the radio saying that we want to ban everything, people would be more willing to meet in the middle. And that's it.
You need to, friend, to go and get your ears checked. I started off telling you I own about 15 or 20 guns, and I'll probably use one in the next week. I don't want to ban any guns. I want to ban killing guns, assault rifles, Glocks, Sig Sauers, rapid-fire magazines. I want to ban them all. You're right. I don't want to ban your gun. You got a six-shooter at home? Have all the fun you want with it. You got a shotgun? Have all the fun you want with it. You got a 30-06 that you got with a... You got to reload three times? I'm right with you. I want to ban guns that are created for only one reason, killing people indiscriminately.
Peter at Perkins Row. Hi, Peter. You're on with Louis Unglesby.
Hi, Louis. This is Peter. Louis, a lot of what you say when it gets in the media, people pay attention to it because of your history in the legal and political system. Do you think that your position is going to be... do you think it's going to result in some legislation or someone out there actually sponsoring a bill that cuts the that acts in a fine with a fine scalpel as you are doing? Are you working with anyone to move forward with this? How can we go beyond talk?
Well, you're right, and I hope that you're right, and I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is. I'll tell you right now, if Wayne LaPierre himself wants to come down here on his private jet and debate me or debate people that really understand gun law and gun control, I'll pay for them to come. They can do it at the city council. They can do it at the school board. I'll pay the rent at the school board if they want to. All the teachers can come. Let's have a real conversation in this city.
How about doing it on this show?
No, let's have it where everybody can be there. Let's have it at Tiger Stadium. Let's make these people that hide behind their lobbying lies come out in the open, answer legitimate questions, and have to answer the question. Let Wayne LaPierre tell you why, with a straight face, you have the right to a Bushmaster AR-15 that can shoot 30 bullets. Let him try to explain that. He doesn't even have one of those.
297-5633 for Louis Unglesby. I see a line is open for the first time in some time. Jeff in Metairie. Jeff, you're on the air with Louis Unglesby.
Hello, I'm on the air.
Yes.
Hey, how you doing? I think we've thanks for taking my call, by the way. I think we've established that the need for a rifle like a Bushmaster is probably not needed in the private citizen's hands. But I wondered what the guests thought about handguns, because at least in my experience, it seems like most of the gun-related violence in New Orleans, Baton Rouge, or wherever related to handguns, and the biggest mass shooting at a school was at Virginia Tech, and I believe the shooter there just had two handguns, a 9mm and a Glock 40 or something like that. So do we ban handguns as well? Thanks for taking my call.
What I'm talking about are, yes, it includes handguns, but not in the ban of the kinds of idea of the Colt 45 or something. I'm talking about these rapid-fire weapons. And take a Glock, a magazine-loaded handgun, is just as deadly in terms of rapid-fire capacity and high-velocity bullets as an AR-15. So it's the ammo that I'm after. You know, there's another way to do this. Now, it's been proposed. It would be legal. You want to buy this ammunition, it costs the tax on it is $25,000. Simple.
$20,000.
You know, yeah, you want to buy this, you want to buy it, you have the right to buy it, your tax is $20,000.
Joey in Sherwood Forest. Joey, you're on with
and
Louis
that money
Unglesby.
Goes to nonviolent, some nonviolent group.
Hi, Joey.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking the call. Mr. Unglesby, you had mentioned that Glock, SIGs, and what have you ought to be outlawed, and that they're just basically weapons designed to do nothing more than take lives. But six shooters were permissible. Well, those guns were designed to do nothing more than take lives as well. But above and beyond that, I think it'd be easier to keep the guns out of the hands of the crazy people. I mean, there's probably hundreds of thousands of them. as opposed to trying to take out millions of guns off the system that are already in citizens' possessions there. Also, why don't we just try banning high-capacity mags? I mean, there's no constitutional amendment protecting the possession of high-volume mags as opposed to having to try to take the guns out of legal citizens, the hands of legal citizens there. I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, on the air, off the air, whatever. That's a great idea, you know. I mean, if you can't choke down the weapon, choke down the ammo. I don't have any problem with that. Make a law after so far from now, you can't make these bullets anymore and you can't have them anymore. I think that's a wonderful idea. I don't think the people, that Strum and Ruger go along with it, but I think it's a great idea. And it's a legitimate and doable thing.
297-5633, please be brief, for Lewis Unglesby, Dorothy in Goodwood. Hi, Dorothy.
Good morning. Merry Christmas. I wanted to make a comment. I really believe that this gentleman was perfectly sane when he did this. I think if you get into his computer, you're probably going to find a lot that proves he was perfectly sane and probably work this all out. Number two, I do believe that we ought to ban the magazines and not the gun. I think that would go a long way. Thanks a lot.
I think that she's saying that the fellow who did this had thought through it and had a sort of a plan, and he probably did. You know, one of the ironies about all of these tragedies is it only takes one bullet for them to kill themselves, you know. They don't have to have a rapid-fire weapon when they finish their carnage. They just shoot themselves in the head, and that's the end of it. And we never know why they do these awful things. But we can't do anything. I mean, it's just reality. We're not going to be able to identify people that go crazy. And people don't, you know, sometimes people go crazy real fast. You can be fine on Monday and nutty by Friday because something happened to you. It's the opportunity to demonstrate your craziness that we're making way too easy.
Dave on Segan. Hi, Dave. You're on with Lewis Unglesby.
Hey, yeah. Look, I've spent many years in the military. I've shot these weapons and every type, and I know that there is no need for personal possession of these weapons. And, you know, you can set as many laws as you want, but you always have somebody that's going to go up and break the law. And the only thing you can do is just take away those weapons. That's how I feel. And I'm an avid hunter myself, where I have several guns, and I even have a high-caliber rifle. It's an old World War II rifle it's a single shot.
Thank you for your idea, Dave.
297. Great. 5633. Jack on I-10. Hi, Jack. You're on with Lewis.
Yes. I heard your guest mention earlier that he would love to hear someone come on and tell him about why these weapons, high-capacity mag or these assault rifles, are something that they need. But in the same turn, I would love to hear an explanation about scenarios where reducing the capacity of these magazines or taking these weapons, these assault weapons, out of the hands of Americans would reduce these instances of mass shooting.
All right, hold your fire, Jack, on I-10, and we will return and spend a few more minutes with Lewis Owens Unglesby on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Lewis Unglesby with us for a few more moments, and we're talking about the aftermath of the tragedy 1 week ago today in Newtown, Connecticut at the Sandy Hook Elementary School. What about Jack on I-10? He made some points that were...
Yes, Jack. You know, I tried the other day. Now I got a bad shoulder, but I was just curious because Adam Lanza had two 30-round clips each in his Bushmaster. I tried to put 10 rifles, which each would carry 3 bullets, in a duffel bag and see how hard it was to carry it around. It's quite a chore. It would take an awful lot of work, and it wouldn't keep somebody from doing it, but it would be very difficult to walk into a school loading that with that kind of a load and then go from place to place, having to constantly re-grab a weapon, start over before they got to you. It wouldn't stop people from doing crazy things. It would stop people from being so efficient.
David in Melrose. Hi, David.
Hello. Thanks for having me, guys. Mr. Unglesby, thanks for coming and speaking in Baton Rouge. I'm a young guy. My opinions are malleable, and I hope they remain so. But I think that we've had crazy people for a long, long time, and we've had guns made to kill people for a long, long time. But I think I hate to point the finger at guns, when I think we've got an issue of society and people being disconnected from one another, so that when you go to a public place, you're not shooting people, you're shooting numbers and statistics. I know that sounds maybe a little bit trite, but I'm a guy that really values my right to bear arms, although I don't have a license, I carry a pocket knife just in case I'm in a situation where there's a threat and somebody needs to be stopped to protect other innocent people. And I consider that a civic duty, and I take it very seriously, and I take the right to bear arms really seriously. And I do like the idea of making it more difficult for ne'er-do-wells to get arms, but making it prohibitive, I think they're making the time. If society keeps deteriorating and keeps becoming more separated as it is, I think there may come a time where more and more people are going to be grateful for that right to keep and bear arms. And
do you have any response?
I believe that America is ascendant, that people are good by nature, that most everyone wants to be law-abiding, peaceful, and loving of their neighbor. I'm not going to live in a world where cynicism and fear mandate how we go about our lives. But it is not difficult. It's not inviting any controversy. It doesn't hurt anyone from having the right to bear arms to do the things that I'm suggesting.
Ken in Franklin. Hi, Ken. You're on with Lewis.
There's been no discussion about the full interpretation, the full wording of the Second Amendment. What happened to the preface to the right to bear arms that says that a strong militia being necessary for the defense of the people?
That's the National Guard. We have that.
But you and others who were advocating change, I don't know of anybody who's come out and said, let's get rid of all guns.
I haven't heard anyone say, let's get rid of all guns, and I don't know anyone that wants. I don't know a person, even the radical left-wing nuts that I sometimes subscribe to, that recognizes the idea that we're getting rid of all guns. But we can. If we can't get rid of AR-15s, then the next step up is a bazooka, a flamethrower. I mean, it's just crazy. There's no need, no useful need or benefit to these type of guns. That's it.
You've seen crime up close and personal in this community, including murders. Would any change in laws affect the carnage that we're having right here in our backyard?
Well, one-to-one person getting mad at each other and having an argument that leads to a murder, it doesn't matter what the weapon is. It can be the kitchen sink that you hit them in the head with, whatever you grab. So that individual violence is just what it is. But we do have these terrible things we hear about these drive-by shootings. And my understanding from police is these are not single-shot pistols. These drive-by shootings are these rapid-fire kind of weapons that wind up with individual people and people out in the front porch and everything else getting killed accidentally.
Well, the Metro Council will be different in 2013. There are several new members. Do you have anybody in mind who might embrace the proposal that you touted as we began our discussion today?
I think that whoever my representative is in the legislature whoever is my senator in the legislature, whoever is my metro councilman in the metro council. I live at the end of Highland Road. The end of that area, our area, is the most educated and affluent in the state, according to what they say on the demographics. That's LSU. That's a highly educated group of professors and all, and I don't think there's a one of them that would disagree with me. So that's a good place for it to start. That's also where there's an awful lot of Republicans. That's a good place for somebody to show some intellectual heft.
You think the mayor might embrace this?
I think the mayor would probably think it was a great idea, but I can't speak for the mayor. He just got reelected in a high vote. He ought to be all for it.
All right, let's go to Doc on Government Street. Kevin, if we can slide Doc in and get Lewis's response to Doc's inquiry. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning. I am somewhat a person that believes that there should be some restrictions. I don't believe in the big clips and all that type stuff, although I don't believe guns are the only problem here. The last four or five people that that committed these types of heinous acts were dressed in fatigues, had gun belts, bullet belts around their torso. Even the guy in Colorado had dyed his hair red because of the movie. I think that's where a lot of the problems lie. And for some reason, I don't hear the left talking about that too much.
All right. We've got some folks that we're going to get to in a few moments, including David Precise with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we'll get their response to the claims that this is a mental health issue more than a gun issue. Donald on Perkins, I think you have a question for Lewis. I want you to join us. Good morning, Donald.
I wanted to make a couple of points on the Second Amendment. The person who talked about the defense, we already have the people who have, the assault rifles and everything, and it didn't stop the things in Columbine and Connecticut and Colorado. Their solution is to have everybody walking around with guns on their hips and a Wild West, which that is taking the insanity in the wrong direction and still doesn't solve the problem. You wind up with, running gun battles.
Real quick, I want to let my friends that just walked in take over here and talk about the mental health issues. But going to the Wild West wasn't so wild. That's another misnomer, that we have in America. It was perfectly legitimate, legal, and required that when the cowboys came into town, they checked their guns at the sheriff, and they didn't get them back till they left town. Now, why are we so possessive about this idea that we got to have a Glock under our pillow? It's nutty.
All right. Thank you, Lewis Unglesby. Appreciate your comments, and we'll see where your ideas go. But Lewis Unglesby has offered some provocative and some might think compelling ideas in his thoughts about gun rights in our world. And we're joined now by David Precise of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. He's the head of the Louisiana chapter. And several times today, including remarks by our guest, we've had him and others refer to a, quote, crazy person who was involved last week in the shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. Was Adam Lanza crazy, or do we know?
From what I've read, there's still not a conclusive any kind of evidence that shows that he had a kind of mental disorder. And FBI statistics show that from 2006 to 2010, there were 156 mass shootings of at least four people being shot and killed, and less than half of those were lone gunmen. And a much better predictor of violence are people who have recently been divorced, lost their job, or that have a history of physical abuse. So it's a big part of what we do is to try to educate the public about the truth of mental illness and the stigma that goes along with that.
Well, is it an unfair conclusion to make that if somebody walks in and kills 26 people, he must be off his rocker?
I would say something's certainly wrong, but it doesn't mean they have. A mental illness is a medical condition that somebody has, and There's a lot of factors at play for when people do that kind of an act to others. So that's, it's not necessarily mental illness.
Well, you inquired with me after a statement made on this show earlier in the week by Steve Crump, the Unitarian pastor, saying, while I liked what most of what I heard, he made a statement that is very common but not always true, that those committing mass shootings usually have mental illness. You're saying they don't?
They don't. I mean, that's just, you know, in the research that I've done and that our national organization, NAMI, and so you can look at NAMI is NAMI.org, and there's a lot of statistics that show that, no, it's a very the percentage, one of the percentages is about 1.1% of our population may experience schizophrenia, but a minuscule amount of those people ever commit any kind of violent act, where you have about 2.3% of the general population that will commit some kind of a violent act.
Now, it's been reported that Adam Lanza was autistic. Autism is not mental illness. Now, well, you want to comment? This is Lanny Dupuy. Why don't you tell us a bit about your
autism
background?
It's an autism spectrum disorder, and what we've heard on the news, which we don't know if it's all correct, is that he had Asperger's, which falls in the autistic spectrum. Autism falls under all the other medical illnesses of mental illness as well. You get the diagnosis in the DSM. The handbook.
All right. What is your background, Lanny?
I am a family member of someone with a mental illness. I have worked at the NAMI Louisiana office until 2 years ago. I've worked with NAMI Baton Rouge, and I do family support groups.
Well, David, I understand your defense of those who have mental challenges, and of course, everybody who's mentally ill is certainly not violent. But on the other hand, there are those who have, I think, legitimate concerns about funding for mental health programs being curtailed and cut, and as a result, there is more of an opportunity for something like this to occur.
Absolutely, Jim. It's, you know, that one of the big pieces of this is resources and funding for mental health. In Louisiana, you may have the number I saw is about 283,000 people on an annual basis that don't just have a mental illness, but a severe one. We have 1% of our state budget, and it's probably less than that by now, is given to mental health resources. The average for a state is 2.3%. And so also $62 per capita is in Louisiana, whereas it's $125 per capita average.
Where is your funding derived?
Our funding comes from a number of sources, from the state, from corporations and from individuals.
Well, in retrospect, and obviously it's much easier to look back, but could anything have been done to prevent this tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, as far as treatment for the gunman?
I would certainly say a lot of times when mental illness is at play, it's simply a failing of the mental health system, and sure, it's one of the big things, and I'm pretty new to my job in particular, and very quickly you learn we as a society and the way we've done things is we have a lot, you know, put more of the emphasis on the back end only when things get very severe with people rather than the preventative phase and recognizing the early signs and providing appropriate treatment on the front end. And that's what we do a lot of times in this state and across the nation.
Well, for those who'd like more information about the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Louisiana, what's the best way to find you?
Well, our phone number, we have a website, NAMILouisiana.org. We have a Facebook account, and our phone number is 225-291-6262.
Well, the NRA press conference slated for this morning has been delayed just a bit, so we will be with you the full hour, both from 9 to 10 and tonight, 8 to 9, and we thank David Precise for joining us. Thank you for coming in as well, Lanny Dupuy, and we will follow this story with earnest throughout the day and throughout the weeks to come on WRKF. Yesterday was the 69th birthday of Jules Demicourt, former LSU journalism professor. He taught 30 years at Louisiana State University and was a major influence on many aspiring journalists, including yours truly. And, of course, He also was a noted recording artist, and he died in 2008 on February the 8th, but his recordings are heard worldwide, and here is one that we've heard a few times that I think is appropriate to play at this time, one day after Jules Demicourt's birthday. Happy birthday, Jules Demicourt.
On dem first day of Christmas, my true love she gave to me a crawfish in a fig tree. On dem second day of Christmas, my true love she gave to me two voodoo dolls and a crawfish in a fig tree. On dem third day of Christmas, my true love she gave to me three stuffed shrimp, two voodoo dolls, and a crawfish in a fig tree. On dem fourth day of Christmas, my true love she gave to me four pousse-cafés, three stuffed shrimp, two voodoo dolls, and a crawfish in a fig tree. On dem fifth day of Christmas, I could not believe in all my days what she come up with. Five whole doo. Four pousse-cafés.
And there are 12 days of Christmas, and Jules Demicourt's recording is available for those who would like to hear more in many venues, and we're glad that his music lives on after his passing in 2008. And we thank you for joining us today. We'll be back next week, and hope you have a great Christmas. And for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to WRKF.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.